If we could get started, that would be terrific. We're not way behind, but we are a little behind. I'm Mary Hines. I'm the Vice Chair of the Finance and Administration Committee, sitting in for Marcella Costa, who is not able to be with us today. And we have a pretty busy agenda before us. If I could have a motion to approve the agenda, please. Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? This agenda will proceed then. Next, we have approval of our July 10th meeting minutes. If I could have a motion to approve them. Is there a second? Moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? That carries unanimously. We have before us one action item today and four information items. First, our action item will be a request to approve a reimbursable project for engineering and design support for the Purple Line. Following that, we will move into our information items, which include an update on our progress to close the recommendations of the FTA's financial management, often called FMO report, from Deputy CFO Blair Fishburne, and a report on the year-end capital program progress by Assistant General Manager for Track and Infrastructure, Rodrigo Bichar. On the operating side, our new CFO, Dennis Anasike. Did I say that right, Dennis, your last name? CK, okay, thank you. Will walk us through the 2014 operating budget performance, including a discussion on ridership, followed by an update on the 2015 operating budget reductions management is undertaking to offset the FY14 operating subsidy deficit. So let me now turn this over to Mr. Thomas to lead us through our action item on the Purple Line.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We're here today to ask for approval to establish a reimbursable project for Metro's initial work on supporting the Purple Line project. For approval for the general manager to execute a reimbursable agreement and to establish a reimbursable budget amount. Briefly, the Purple Line is a 16-mile light rail line that Maryland is in the process of soliciting. It'll have touch points with Metro at New Carrollton, College Park, Silver Spring, and Bethesda. And as you move through those stations, there's a little bit of involvement at New Carrollton, a little bit more at College Park, meaningful work at Silver Spring, and significant work at Bethesda. So at this point, the state is in the middle of its solicitation, trying to hire a contractor. And what we're asking here for is the reimbursable project so we can more fully support their solicitation phase, so we can review designs, possibly support any questions that come in from their contractors. And also, we're going to be managing the work at Bethesda inside the train room. So we need to start putting together a contract package for that work as well. So we've come up with an estimate for the initial work of $4,771,588. That is the amount that we're asking for as the initial project budget. So with that, we're recommending approval of a reimbursable project and authorization for the general manager to negotiate and execute and a memorandum of understanding and reimbursable project agreement for the Purple Line design and engineering support work.
Mr. Folger.
So we're going to take existing staff and do initial design, or are we going to bid this out to the private sector?
We will hire one of our on-call consultants to do the work.
Okay.
For the Purple at Bethesda.
And then the
reviews of the designs or impacts on us at all of the stations will be done by existing staff.
So we're going to have to use some of our existing staff to accomplish this project.
That's correct.
All right. Did we anticipate this when Maryland decided to do a Purple Line project, that we would have to get intricately involved?
I think that we've known all along that as this project was going to come online, that we would have meaningful involvement with this project, yes.
No, I know they're going, it's four stations, and I'm just trying to figure out the, how all this activity happens and what the impact is on Metro.
It's normal for any project that interfaces with Metro, even if it's not actual construction, for us to be aware of it and to review the construction so it doesn't impact negatively on our facilities.
Silver Spring project that we have that we're dealing with. I hope not.
Hopefully not.
I would expect Maryland, I guess it's Maryland DOT in this case, will do a professional job.
Other questions? Mr. Goldman.
It's not a question. It's really just a comment just on behalf of Maryland and Montgomery County, and I'm sure my colleagues from Prince George's share the view. The Purple Line is very important to both of our counties and to the state as a whole. I think it's going to be very important to Metro because it will provide an east-west link, linking four of our stations, two on the Red Line in Montgomery County and two in Prince George's County. It's moving along at a very quick pace. Probably the request for proposals are due in January of next year, and once those proposals are received, the expectation by MDOT is that a actual recommendation will be made to the Board of Public Works by spring of next year. So this is moving along, and it comes at a time when a cooperation project between MDOT and WMATA to get this moving and make sure that the interfaces work smoothly both in construction and when the Purple Line is completed, so that passengers will be able to make a seamless transfer between the Purple Line and Metro when completed, hopefully before the end of the decade. So I certainly endorse this proposal and endorse it for all of you for board support. Thank you.
Mr. Downey.
And the nature of the proposal is we will be reimbursed for all this work. This is not a Metro expense. This is as part of the cost of the project. We will be paid for the contributions that we have to make in terms of time and people.
Mr. Crowley. Oh, I'm sorry, Alvin. Nichols.
No,
I have another friend whose name is Alvin Crowley, and that was what came into my mind. Mr. Nichols.
I don't know. I
it says Mr. Giancola.
This is my opportunity to get back at Tony. Is he within earshot? It's already bad. Okay. No, I just a couple of brief words just to build on Michael's comments. We're not, as a board member, involved directly in that project, but as in terms of the interface between this transit system and the Purple Line and MDOT, it clearly is employing best practices in trying to really create an effective enhancement and augmentation to this regional system that's really going to add enormous value. So clearly, I advocate and support this, and I know that the system itself supports and sponsors it. So that's really all I want to share. Thank you for being able to consider and to move this forward. It's very exciting.
So before I ask for a motion, I would just note that this is sort of the epitome of connecting communities in our role as conveners and as worrying about how people move throughout this region. This is a terrific project. I do think we need to, as a board, keep our eye on the fact that we will see more of these kinds of projects where a jurisdiction or a state takes the lead and says this is the right way for us to go, but we need to interface, and figuring out over time how to make that interface the least cost to our agency while achieving the greatest benefit for the region is going to be, I think, one of the great challenges. As I've said at this table before, having lived through the addition of the Roslyn elevators in Roslyn, there are lessons to be learned in each one of these projects, and I think our agency is getting better. But I think we'll learn some things in this project that we hadn't learned before that we can take into the next collaborative effort. And so I support these things very much, but I think we have to always keep our eye on what are the lessons that we learn along the way, too.
If you have any lessons from your experience from the jurisdictional end, that would be appreciated.
Well, you know, I think the key, and I'll just say this because I've had this discussion with our staff at home, is The lessons come in the debrief, and the lessons come on all sides of the equation, whether you're talking about developers who had to be worked around or worked with, jurisdictional staff who took the lead on organizing the project, WMATA's role as oversight, making sure that it could all come into the system seamlessly. So the lessons are different depending on which role you're in, and WMATA could potentially be in any one of those roles. And so I think it is this conversation that needs to happen as we finish these big things up and close them out that's going to give us the best information. So that being said, is there someone from Maryland who might like to move that we do this?
I'll move.
You'd like Alvin Crowley.
I'd like Alvin Crowley.
Okay.
I think all right. I know him.
Yeah, I think you do. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? There is no opposition. That is approved unanimously. Thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. Let's move on now, Mr. Fishburne, to an update on the FMO.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members.
Excuse me, Mr. Fishburne, let me interrupt. We need to certify that the closed session, and I was waiting for more of my colleagues to come down. I move that the board certify to the best of each member's knowledge and with no individual member dissenting that at today's board executive session of September 11th, 2014, only such matters as are authorized for discussion in executive session under the board bylaws Article 10 and only those matters identified in the notice by which the executive session was convened were heard, discussed, or considered by the board. Is there a second? Moved and seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That carries unanimously. Yes. Yes. Mr. Nichols actually made that motion. Okay, Mr. Fishburne, you're up.
Thank you. Again, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Our objective for this item today is to update you on the status of Metro's committed corrective action plan items in response to the Federal Transit Administration's Financial Management Oversight Review Report that was officially issued to us 3 months ago. This timeline should be familiar to you. When we were last before the committee back in July, we had just submitted the 30-day corrective action plan items to FTA. Since then, I'm pleased to report that we've made on-time submissions to FTA for the 60-day items on August 9th, and for the 90-day items, earlier this week on September 8th. And I'll talk in a few minutes about the two extended items noted at the bottom. Just to reset everyone, the final FMO report, which we received on June 10th, 2014, contained 9 categorical findings and 5 additional advisory comments. Associated with these findings and comments were 45 discrete recommendations to improve WMATA's financial management controls, all of which were accepted by our executive leadership. In response, Metro Management proposed 65 specific corrective action plan items with timelines, all consistent with the report's required completion schedules. The FTA accepted all of our corrective action plan commitments and associated submission timeframes. As of this week, WMATA has now submitted documentation for 60 of the 65 CAP items and has fulfilled all the CAPs also for 2 of the 3 material weaknesses, all 6 of our significant deficiencies, and 3 of 5 advisory comments. As a matter of process, after submission of our FMO corrective action plan documentation and subsequent FTA review, we're notified whether our submissions have been deemed adequate in satisfying the associated finding recommendations or that additional actions are needed. For example, after reviewing WMATA's 30-day CAP item submissions, FTA responded that 8 recommendations had been adequately satisfied and that 4 follow-up actions were requested. These follow-ups included 3 revisions to our grants management manual, as well as a plan for identifying and resolving potential overdraws and federal grant reimbursements. We fulfilled these follow-up requests on time on August 26 by providing FTA with the requested plan and the appropriate grants manual revisions. As part of broader FMO response measures, We've also retained the services of an outside forensic accounting firm to review certain major capital project expenditures in fiscal year 2004, fiscal year 2014, in order to ensure compliance with FTA grants requirements and therefore federal grant funding eligibility. FTA responses and follow-up requests, if any, to WMATA's 60-day submissions in August are still pending, but we expect them soon. Responses and follow-up requests to the 90-day CAP submissions of earlier this week are expected in approximately a month. As noted earlier, there are two 90-day CAP items which WMATA has requested a due date extension from FTA. These items are in response to the finding material weakness on budget controls, specifically regarding reviewing open grants and analyzing federal expenditures by activity line item and scope, and completing reconciliation of open grants and submitting any necessary grant revisions and amendments. In order to complete these substantial efforts accurately and comprehensively, additional time beyond the 90 days is required. The new deadline for these two CAP items will be set based upon mutual agreement between Metro and the FTA regional office. We have augmented staff resources to address the workload demands so we can fulfill these extended corrective action plans as soon as possible. Back at the April 7th special board meeting on the draft FMO report, where our procurement policy was updated and the initial grants management policy was adopted, the board requested staff to provide an FMO response status monitoring framework that incorporated risk assessment provisions. We're providing two tables that are up today that are updated versions of what was presented previously. The first, shown here, addresses the status of CAP items with respect to completion risk against the report's findings degree or severity, against the report findings degree or severity of financial controls risk exposure. As you can see, as of this week, we've completed and submitted 23 of 25 material weakness caps, all 31 significant deficiency caps, and 6 of 9 advisory comment caps. The two extended cap items we just discussed are in the red square in the top right corner. The second table provides the status of cap items, again with respect to completion risk, against the cap items' committed completion timelines. Again, 12 of 14 90-day cap items and all of the 30 and 60-day cap items have been submitted. And of the five remaining, three of them that are associated with advisory comments have completion deadlines of 180 days or more. I'd like to conclude by reviewing our next steps. Our immediate task is to determine an acceptable completion deadline for the two extended cap items and complete the three remaining 180-day plus items. And we're committed to achieving these deadlines as well as to responding promptly and completely to any follow-up requests from FTA on the 60 and 90-day CAP items already submitted. Of course, ongoing compliance and long-term adherence to new, updated, and reinforced controls policies, processes, and procedures is essential. In June, the general manager outlined initial plans for monitoring compliance with the new procurement and grants management policies adopted by the board in April. Procurement compliance monitoring measures will include ensuring full and open competition, preventing and detecting potential conflicts of interest, performing independent cost estimates, and providing ongoing training. Performance monitoring areas for grants management compliance will include ensuring timely and accurate grant award applications, revisions and amendments, reimbursements, closeouts, and required federal reporting. Finally, we're working now to build up WMATA's internal compliance office through increased staffing in key areas, including in procurement council, accounting, and budget, as well as utilizing compliance monitoring software. And with that, Madam Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions from the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Fishburne. Questions, colleagues? Hearing none. Clearly, we want you to continue on with this very intensive and careful work. And I probably speak for everyone that we're looking forward to closing the two which have been extended in as timely a manner as we possibly can, that that's important to the region and to this board. And correct me or remind me, we talked a lot about the board being able to monitor things going forward, and you mentioned some of those things. Are you coming back to us with a dashboard proposal or a reporting mechanism on the higher level monitoring issues associated with grants and procurement?
Yes, we did. As I mentioned, we provided the framework, and we are providing those in the monthly financial reports and quarterly financial reports.
Great. So that's where we'll find. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. Hearing no questions, then let's move on to our next report, which is the year-end capital program progress from Mr. Bitar.
Good afternoon. Today I'll be presenting the fourth quarter progress report for WMATA fiscal year 2014. Thank you. Metro's capital program covers a wide range of projects aimed to improve safety, equipment reliability, and overall customer service. During fiscal year 2014, we completed a lot of work. But before we get into the details, I want to show a couple key programs that are helping Metro achieve its goals. Projects like new electronic payment program and the new 7000 series rail cars, among others, not only help Metro renovate this equipment, but also our customers will experience better service while riding Metro. Now to the part of the business we're here. The total expenditure for fiscal year 2014 is $789 million through the month of June. As you can see in the graph, we are $56 million below the forecast. This represents a total investment of 93% of the forecasted program, or 79% total investment of the $996 million available budget. The capital investment program summary shows the nine subgroups and their individual expenditure rates. If I can draw your attention to the third and fourth columns, in the middle of the slide, you will see that the $789 million expended through June 30th represents 79% of the total capital budget. In the following slides, we will review relevant projects for some of the nine subgroups listed on this slide. Starting with vehicles and vehicle parts, two out of three projects met their target for this year. The third project, bus replacement, CIP 106, delivered 25 out of the 85 scheduled new buses. Even though the 11 pilot buses were delivered on time, production was delayed primarily due to manufacturing and quality issues. But since then, the issues have been resolved and production has restarted. The new target date for the remaining 60 buses is October 31st, so next month. Turning to track and structures, let me report that we have invested 100% of this program's capital budget. As you can see on the chart, the expenses and deliverables are marked as at 100%, even though there are two projects that did not meet their targets. On my last presentation, I mentioned that CIP 18 and 19 were behind schedule due to weather and the three-month stop work order put in place after the Union Station accident. The staff recognized this and looked for opportunities to accelerate work in other areas. If I can draw your attention to the other projects, you will see that actual work completed exceeded the initial targets. The maintenance and other facilities groups experienced delays. Most of the delays were due to permitting and third-party support issues. However, there was significant progress on all five projects. Starting with Capital Project 35, Bus Garage, WMATA issued notice to proceed to the contractor in February 2014. The contractor mobilized to the site and commenced site preparation activities. The project scheduled completion date is September 2015. Capital Project 84, Southern Bus Garage Replacement. The solicitation for this design build started in October 2013. The procurement phase was completed with award of the contract to Hensel Feltz in June 2014. The notice to proceed is scheduled for September 15. which will lead us to contract completion in July 2017. Next, Capital Project 71, test track, parking garage, and commissioning facility. The commissioning facility and parking garage were expected to be completed this summer. However, our contractor, Skanska, had issues with its subcontractor's performance. Both locations are progressing well now and will be turned over to WMATA late in the fall of this year. Regarding the test track, as you may recall, I reported that the construction of the test track depended upon CSX supply and flagging support, since we are constructing our test track adjacent to their tracks. CSX has provided the requested support, and that allowed Skanska to advance some work. However, the contractor continues to have low productivity. We continue to work with the contractor to maintain the schedule, which is currently showing April 2015. Capital Project 101, the police training facility. We successfully worked with Fairfax County to obtain the necessary approvals. Construction activities started and progressed significantly by the end of the fiscal year. The new facility is projected to open by the end of this calendar year. Capital Project 106, operations facility, fell behind due to permits, but the process was completed and work commenced on the renovation of the buildings. Work was progressing quite well by the end of the fiscal year. We are projecting an opening date by the end of this calendar year as well. In terms of NTSB requirements, I'm happy to report that all but one of the capital projects met their schedules. On regards to CIP-139-P1, that's the only one that didn't meet the target. There's a good reason for that. We marked this as green because the number of track circuits that needed to be tested was reduced due to the track circuit replacement program. The more we replace, the less we have to test. At this point in time, there are around 700 modules left to be replaced, and we estimate a program completion date by the end of calendar year 2017. Elevators and escalators. CIP 72. Contractor Schindler continued to have problems with the elevator subcontractor, and parts availability became a significant issue that the program couldn't overcome. A total of 12 elevators were rehabilitated, and two more were in progress by the end of June. Regarding escalator rehabilitations, during my last presentation, I mentioned that the number of escalators was revised from 37 down to 32 with this code 5. Out of the 32, a total of 23 were completed on time, and 7 more were in progress at that time. Since then, the 7 escalators have been completed. Lastly, regarding escalator replacements, this category is moving forward according to schedule. By the end of fiscal year 14, 9 escalators were replaced, and 5 more were in progress. Now Tom Webster will provide an update on fiscal year 2015 capital program budget.
Thank you, Rodrigo. As Rodrigo mentioned earlier, Metro invested $789 million of the $996 million FY14 capital improvement program budget. Consistent with Metro policy, the capital funding agreement, and the board budget resolution adopted back in May, the $206 million of remaining unspent capital project budget authority carries over into FY15. So including that carried over budget authority, the FY15 capital budget now totals $1.1 billion. Also, due to ongoing delays in federal reimbursements for project expenditures, Metro has identified $80 million of capital project activities to defer or delay that were previously scheduled for the first 6 months of FY15. These deferrals are not related to safety critical work and will have little or no impact on service reliability, customers, employees, or existing contracts. There's also no deferral of the $75 million of additional investment in Metro 2025, a CART train, and bus expansion priority projects. As a result of the lower than forecasted investment during FY14 the $80 million of deferrals and delays in project spending, staff will be returning to the committee with a presentation of an updated FY15 capital improvement program budget and an updated FY16 to 2021 capital improvement program or multi-year capital improvement program. We expect to be doing that in November with that update. Next slide. So just in terms of the schedule for the next several months, as I mentioned, we're in the process now of updating and revising the FY15 capital budget and CIP expenditure plan. In October and November, we will begin the development of the next six-year CIP, which obviously uses the existing CIP as the base, and it will again focus on safety and state of good repair projects, as well as the Metro 2025 investments. In November, we'll present a revised six-year CIP to the committee. During this time period, we will also be working with the jurisdictions on updating and renewing our capital funding agreement, and we hope to reach agreement in principle on the new renewed capital funding agreement in the November timeframe, and then to be returning to the committee and to the board to present the FY16 to 2021 proposed capital program, as well as the FY16 operating capital budgets. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Webster. Colleagues, questions? Mr. Downs, Mr. Bolger, Mr. Brown.
This is the second year in a row that we've had an underage in our actual expenditures on the capital budget in the Bowway, as you pointed out, $200 million. Absorbing that $200 million into the next three fiscal years is a significant task and requires a lot of focused conversation around the CFA. I'm not sure that simply bringing the revised 15 to 20 CIP that absorbs that bow wave to the Finance Administration Committee and assumes a jurisdiction agreement in principle on the CFA in November is a realistic expectation. I think it's the beginning of a lot of conversations among the jurisdictions about the CFA, but this will be a very difficult CFA for all of us to agree to because of the potential size of it. It's just a word of caution a bit about assuming that presenting it in November and reaching an agreement in principle on the CFA in November may be a bridge too far. I'd urge some caution about the amount of time that it's going to take to walk everybody through these revised numbers.
I think you probably reflect conversations we've each had at home. And I welcome any comments staff has on this. I know you are starting that work with our staffs. To me, Tom, I would say there's two pieces to this. One is the principles about how money moves, where, in fact, we may have a lot of regional agreement around the way we've been doing it the last several years. The last time that there was a big shift in how the money moved from jurisdictions to the authority. It's another question about what is accomplishable and the order in which projects might move forward. And so I would separate those two things a little bit and say, is it possible for us to get to agreement in principle about some of those underlying transfer of dollars arrangements, recognizing there's a much longer conversation about how much we can accomplish and in what order certain projects should be done so that everybody in the region feels that they're moving forward. So I don't know if that reflects some of your thinking That certainly is how I have been thinking about it.
The devil's always in the
details.
It's
totally in the details, totally. But I would say if we don't have to argue about how the money moves, then we can go right to the conversation about projects, which is, I think, where the heart of the conversation.
Well, it's also about our capacity.
Yes, I totally agree.
To
deliver.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Mr. Bulger?
The glass half full. My concern about situation that we just heard about is how do we do the exercise the option on the rail cars? Okay, so glass half full, we've got a little bit of flex here that for 2 years in a row, as the chairman mentioned, we've been missing the mark by about $200 million, and here we've got a little cushion. So roll that forward as my concern about making options work. We've got a little bit of a cushion.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Because we got to do the options on these rail cars, and that's game one.
Yep, top priority, Mr. Brown.
Thanks. I have a comment and then a question. I first wanted to recognize staff for the good work on a presentation like this that really links the dollars to the performance of the program. I've got a little history with the WMATA Capital Program, and I can just say that over the last, I really think that to be able to have these kind of conversations, to be able to see at the year end the linkage between underspending, overspending, and what's been accomplished is a huge step forward, something that we weren't able to do several years ago. And so I want to congratulate staff for all the work. I know it's been years and years of it, and I know that there have been challenges. And I know there are going to be challenges going forward as we negotiate the CFA, but I feel like we can at least we can have a better conversation now that we're all better informed. And then I have a specific question on the test track. Will the delay in the test track have any impact on the delivery or operation of the 7000 series rail cars?
The short answer is no, because we have been keeping track of the test track progress precisely because of that reason. So we have two different test areas that we can use if needed. We have done that in the past. They won't impact revenue operations because the testing happened at night. So we are prepared for that contingency, so no.
Thank you. Mr. Downs?
Just a suggestion, and I've made it before, and I'll keep making it. Staff did a wonderful job at one point about showing how we got into a deficit about track fasteners and how the investment over time would get us out of that hole and when we would get to stable state funding. And we've said it's roughly 17 plus or minus. We've never shown that graphically again about the majority of the state of good repair. And if we're going to have an informed conversation that lets the public understand better where we're at in this rebuilding process, I'd encourage you to have that as part of the presentation on the progress we're making on the CIP, the capital budget. We have to make it, I think, more transparent for our jurisdictions and our customers and the other stakeholders in the business. So it's, I know it's good for green and red in the accomplishment goal, but it's helpful about the rest of the longer term.
How about we present that next time when we do that? Okay.
What's fasteners? It was continuous welded rail.
Let's next time, next month, present it for the major ones we've done before. Put them all together in one presentation.
I think that would be great because I do think our message about state of good repair is one that bears regular conversation in the public and also is a context on which the capital plan sits. Mr. Nichols?
Thank you. I also
recognize his name.
Mr. Crowley had to leave.
I had to read his tag.
Mr. Crowley's gone. Oh, dude, your mic's on. Yeah,
mic's on.
Mr. Crowley out. Mr. Dick was in. Okay. Just a couple of quick things. One is to thank you, as others have shared,
for the report. Appreciate it. It is understandable, and it's getting better and better and better. I know that there are a lot of balls in the air right now that the finance team and the budget teams and all of the organization is moving forward right now. I won't call it juggling because that would suggest something else. But as you, from a global context, as we look at the comment that Tom raised a moment ago about structuring CFA discussions, I would encourage us to have dialogue, and I know that you already are, with our principals from our stakeholders about how we most effectively reach kind of threshold common understandings moving forward into those negotiations and to moving forward on that agreement. It's going to be, as all have said, it's going to be challenging. It's important. Developing a common understanding of what the goal is and the steps to get there, I think, is going to be critically important as we establish those a schedule, a realistic schedule. And appreciate your being as aggressive as you can be in terms of setting deadlines and time frames. But we have to temper those with realistic understandings of the environment that we're in. So that would just a global comment. A specific question with respect to the 120 Metro Access vehicles. Those are, talk just for a quick second about how those play out in our fleet. Those, some are replacements, some are additive, but just give a little bit of context in terms of our service and how that fleet acquisition impacts our service delivery.
Well, thank you, Mr. Nichols. We have treated the Metro Access capital item as replacement only for some time now, because a few years ago we actually saw for the first time a reduction in ridership on the service, but we knew that that would be short-lived, and as our actuary had predicted several years ago, in FY14 we started to see an increase again in the ridership. We do have some mechanisms at our disposal about how to address demand without automatically increasing the size of the fleet, and we've been employing those methods, everything from looking to greater efficiencies in the way that trips are scheduled, certain judicious use of taxi service where it's available, even though it's not uniformly available across our service area. And also looking at ways, as you've all heard us talk before, about partnering with other agencies to do some of the work. So that combination of effort, I think, has allowed us to use the existing fleet and keep it at the same number for some time. But we are looking now, as the ridership is starting to increase at our retirement schedule of the old fleet, and looking into where the appropriate juncture might be to look at extending, keeping some of those vehicles a little bit longer. But we have not done that yet. We're in the process of looking at that right now.
Any other questions? If not, we'll move on then to the final two elements, which is the FY2014 operating budget performance and an update on 2015 operating budget reductions. Mr. Enesik.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. This particular item deals or provides a review of the FY14 operating budget. And I think I should start by stating that the numbers that I'm about to present are unaudited. And in that respect, there could be some changes, but our expectation is that there should not be any material changes from the numbers that we're about to go through. That said, if you turn to the next page, this page provides a summary, a top-line summary of expenses, revenues, and subsidy. As you can see, under the FY14 column, in terms of revenues, Metro ended the year with $853 million in terms of total revenue, which is actually on par with FY2013. But as you can also see, that's actually almost $39 million less than we budgeted for FY14. And in terms of percentage terms, that's 4.4% less than budget. When I get to the next page, I mean, we can talk about some of the reasons, but I think you'll see a little bit later that Metro Rail drove most of the variance that you're seeing here, based primarily on four factors. One, obviously, you saw the federal shutdown during the year, which disproportionately impacted rail. We had, even though I wasn't here, we had the weather environment that was impactful in terms of service and cost to the organization. We also dealt with the delayed opening of the Silver Line, as well as the reduction in the transit benefit values, which, again, collectively had a significant impact on rail. But the good news is that Metro managed to keep expenses below budget. As you can see in the middle horizontal column, Metro spent $1.6 billion in FY14, which is actually 1% less than budget, which then means that Metro ended the year with a $22 million, almost a $23 million additional subsidy need. And in terms of cost recovery, we ended up with a cost recovery ratio that's 2.2 percentage points less than budget. If you turn to the next slide, this slide gives you a better sense of both the ridership and the revenue impact that we saw across the modes. In terms of rail, as I indicated a little bit earlier, you see that for the year, we ended up with about $204 million rides compared to an expectation of 219, which consequently impacted the level of revenues that we got from rail. In this case, $597 versus $644 million. Bus, however, behaved quite differently. In this case, bus ridership and revenues were actually above budget by 2 and 3 percentage points, respectively. Access, as Christian mentioned a little bit earlier, has gone back to the historical trend, which is something that obviously has impact with respect to expenses. But in this particular case, the revenues did not go in the same direction as a result of the fare structure that was implemented again last year. The remaining two categories, parking and non-passenger revenues collectively, did better than budget. But again, I think the driver here, as you can see, is that rail, which is a significant part of the operations, did less than expected and therefore impacted overall revenue profile. Turning to the next page, this sort of delineates some of the reasons that I indicated a little bit earlier. What I would like to highlight on this page is that with respect to bus, we saw growth or a ridership gain across the jurisdictions, particularly in D.C., where the Kids Ride Free program, you know, contributed a lot in terms of bus ridership. And then to the next page, where we actually look at some of the revenue, rather some of the expense details, we see that broadly speaking, labor costs, which consists of both salaries, wages, and benefits, were above budget. I'll speak a little bit about that in a minute. While the categories that are, can see that, but they're shaded in the middle, which are non-labor, are collectively did better, which meant that of the $1.6 billion in expenses, that and the ultimate deficit that we ended up for the year, the overall deficit in the labor category was actually moderated to some degree by what we saw in the non-labor categories. For example, on the next page, you'll see that in terms of overtime, we saw an overtime increase of 78 versus $60 million budgeted, which is $18 million, as well as fringe, which was higher than budget due to some of the collective bargaining changes. But that was ultimately impacted by vacancies, the number of vacancies that we have as a group. So in terms of the net deficit for the year, the non-revenue the non-labor expenses, which contributed $27 million in terms of salvage, helped us in moderating the expenses overage that we saw on the labor side. But at the end of the day, the organization still ended up, Metro in this case, ended up with a deficit for the year of almost 23 million dollars, which we as an organization have to take care of. And as was discussed during the course of the year, the organization started the year with a $10 million salvage. So the net impact for the year is about $13 million, which I will discuss when we talk about the 2015 update. With that, Madam Chairman, I will respond to any questions that the board may have.
Thank you. Mr. Nichols?
Again, thank you for the presentation. It's very clear and concise. With respect to the Silver Line, specifically how much of the budget deficit did the delayed opening of the Silver Line contribute to? Because can you quantify that for me? Because we didn't have revenue operations yet, we had geared up for the opening of the line, and there was expense that was sunk cost, so to speak.
My understanding is that the delayed reopening of the Silver Line contributed about $17
million.
$17 in terms of loss revenue, yes. Correct.
Mr. Dyke, did you have your hand up? No, Mr. Bolger.
And it was 6 months.
I'm going to let my good colleague, Mort, jump on this. If overtime is continuously goes up every year, what does that mean for our fatigue management initiative?
Actually, I believe overtime year over year is somewhat down between the 2 years, but against budget was up. As part of the fatigue management program and the policies that I signed off on a month or two ago, we are increasing the number of staff so to make sure that people don't work a seventh day, that the number of hours in a day are limited. And that, in effect, will help with the overtime issue. Also, we have taken a more realistic look at when overtime is needed and have budgeted that in FY15, appropriately. I get my years mixed up. And I look at Rodrigo because a significant part of the responsibility for managing overtime falls in his area of maintenance, and he has committed, and I know he'll achieve it, that we were going to live within our budget. So to answer your question is, yes, they're related. We have budgeted for FY15, especially in the rail area, the number of people we think that will address the fatigue management. And the bus side, as we hire people, we are moving that direction. As I advised the board earlier, I do not believe that by the end of this year we'll have all the people in place, but we will have mitigated the issues in terms of fatigue. We'll have more to do in the second half of the fiscal year.
Rich, we could expect a combination of additional employees that we had to hire for Silver Line, the fatigue management initiative. We should start seeing a flattening of overtime.
We will see ourselves
versus hitting the budget.
We'll see ourselves hitting the budget.
Then we can take a deeper dive on what the budget for overtime in the next budget cycle should when we get around to that.
Sure, we can explain where the overtime is still planned. We still have planned overtime.
Yeah, I understand that. We're never going to get away from it. Right. I just wanted to see if we could, as we did with Christian's operation, try to flatten the curve.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And as I said, actual to actual, we were down slightly this year versus the past year, but we were not where we should be with regard to budget.
Mr. Goldman.
I wanted to extend a welcome to Dennis and your first report in your first day, and I appreciate your report. I wanted to just spend some time talking about the shortfall in revenue for FY14 because it concerns me greatly because it raises two kinds of issues. One is what impact it has on the operating budget next year, in FY15 that we're beginning. And second of all, what it means for the long term in terms of long-term trends in ridership and what impact that should have on our capital improvement program in buying rail cars. So we go back to the discussion we had on the last question. You pointed out some of the factors that made FY14 somewhat exceptional, the federal shutdown, some bad weather. But there's a number of other factors that may suggest longer-term, you know, trends that we really have to get to the bottom of, and some of those things are sort of the reduction in federal spending, the sequester, and what that means in terms of fewer federal employees, fewer contractors. There's been a number of reports in the press that the D.C. area economy seems to be flattening out and not showing growth, and there's the impact long-term of things like the reduction in the federal transit benefit and you know, telecommuting, teleworking by federal workers as well as workers in private industry. And until we get some handle on whether these are really short-term things that just affected FY14 and will affect moderately FY15, or whether we're seeing systemic changes, organic changes in what the level of ridership will be for the next 4 or 5 10 years, it becomes very difficult as a board member to, A, know where we're going next year, where on that Simon mentioned. It just seems to be a heroic assumption that ridership would grow 7% for this year, FY15. And GM has also proposed some cuts already in that, some reductions, which I guess you'll address in the next part of the presentation. But I think we need to have a better sense whether that's enough and what we're actually looking for in terms of an operating budget for next year. But we also need to know long-term what are the trends are, so we have a better sense, a better level of comfort as to what ridership can be expected during FY20 through FY2025, and what that means in terms of the number of rail cars that we really need. I would love to have more rail cars on the red line so that those turnarounds that happen now at Grosvenor end. But I've got to feel comfortable justifying that there's enough people who are going to be riding those 8-car trains or those 6-car trains if the turnarounds go all the way to Shady Grove, to feel comfortable voting on that and recommending to the jurisdictions, the state of Maryland, that they support that as part of the capital funding agreement negotiations. So I guess what I'm leaving you with is just my feeling that I need more information coming over the next 30 or 60 days as to what are these ridership trends and what they really mean.
You actually touched on a number of the issues that I spend a lot of time thinking about as well. So we intend to be coming to you in October and in November to try to talk about exactly those things. You know, there's not one silver bullet thing that is causing our sort of current issues with rail ridership. It's a lot of little different things. And so the hope is that we can come to you with and sort of paint a larger picture with data from OPM, you know, to talk about telework, data about capital bike share, what's the impact that that's having on ridership, data from lots of different sources. And I don't think this – I think this will be more sort of short-term focused, FY16, 17, 18. I think we can talk to the planning folks, I think, and maybe get a little bit of more of a medium, long-term picture looking at the longer-term trends for the region. But we will definitely be coming back to you with that.
I appreciate that. I didn't expect the answer today. I just wanted to sort of tee up the issue.
Yep.
Ms. Hudgens.
I wanted to ask the question regarding Silver Line. You indicated the $17 million expense for the late opening. The cost that we are dealing with, that we're continuing the repairs that need to be done, already covered, if I understand, from the project. But have we gotten to any point in understanding what any of the costs that we've incurred for the late will be resolved.
We don't have a recourse for the revenue, if you will. As you point out in the agreements with Dulles, the airport authority, there are certain remedial work that has to be done. It's being done at their cost. Mm-hmm. But there's no recourse for lost revenue.
Any other questions? If not, let's move on to FY 2015, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The goal of the budget is to discuss some of the adjustments that
some of us have been here a lot longer and can't remember to turn our buttons on.
The goal is actually threefold, to present to the committee some of the changes that the GM has recommended with respect to the FY15 operating budget. Briefly, we will look at ridership just for the first month of July, particularly within the context of the fare adjustments that was implemented in May of this year, as well as the collateral impact of the Silver Line opening. And finally, I will provide to the committee some sense of the budget calendar for FY16, which we will begin discussing with the committee next month. So, in the spring of this year, the GM directed the team to start exploring potential cost reductions when it became apparent to Metro that we may end the year with a budget deficit, particularly as one that was beyond the salvage that Metro was carrying into the year. And as I indicated a little bit earlier, Metro ended up ending the year with a $23 million deficit with respect to the FY14 operations. So the goal of that exercise was actually threefold. One was to identify sufficient resources that will make the need for additional jurisdictional ask unnecessary. Two was to help provide cushion with respect to what we experienced in 14 and perhaps may also carry over into 15. And finally, to identify some resources that will be used to address some of the issues that we are already addressing with respect to the FMO findings and recommendations. So, and some of those activities, as you know, started in 14 and will continue in 15. So when you look at the next page, the leadership team actually took that direction and went to work. But there was one guiding principle, which is none of the suggested adjustments had to have a negative impact on security or safety or even impact the level of customer service beyond those that was already planned. So with that guiding principle, the team was able to identify about $45.5 million in potential reductions. And, excuse me, those reductions, as you know, fall within the board-approved budget, which means that there is no expectation for additional board action. However, the budget office will continue to report based on the revised guidelines to make sure, working with the departments, that we are living within the new reality. But then, if you look at the next slide, this particular slide provides a sense of where the reductions were identified. Broadly speaking, the reductions were about 40% in labor, which is personnel and overtime, and about 60% in non-labor. And if I try to bucket the non-labor costs, it really falls into two broad categories. One is utilities, and the other one is materials and supplies. With respect to utilities, Those, so just the savings are coming from either contractual savings or lower utilization expectations. And so, again, it's not expected to impact service levels that we have out on the street, either with respect to bus or with respect to rail, because some of those contractual agreements were established through, or rather from 14, and so the benefits carry over through the 15 cycle. With respect to materials and supplies, there are some deferrals here, but those deferrals, again, are things that have been identified as not being impactful in terms of immediate operations or, again, impacting any of the other items that I mentioned. Finally, there's labor, where the total reductions is about $18.5 million when you add salaries and overtime. Here, what has been recommended, temporary reductions or rather temporary delays in staffing levels across a myriad of departments. But when you line that up against the historical vacancy levels, it is clear that, you know, we can afford the reductions that have been identified, and again, no noticeable impact will be seen with respect to services on the street. Consistent with the discussion and the issue that Mr. Borgia raised a few minutes ago, and the response that the GM just provided, we are watching over time carefully, and obviously there continues to be a risk. I mean, if the weather turns south on us, there will be some impact, but there's an elevation in terms of how that's going to be monitored, particularly around special events and the level of resources that we dedicate to that. Shifting slightly to ridership, the good news here is that the fare adjustments that we implemented last June has behaved or is behaving the way it was projected, which means that there's been minimal impact in terms of ridership. And you can see that when you look at what's happening with both Metro Rail and Metro Bus. With respect to Metro Rail, ridership actually is on par with July of 2014. And when you look at bus is actually slightly up compared to same period last year. But again, it is too early in the process to conclude that we're home safe, but we'll continue to monitor what's going on. But at least at this point, the behavior on the street and from our customers, you know, appears to be consistent with our expectations. There is, though, with respect to parking, some initial evidence that there's some impact around Prince George's County, where there was an additional surcharge tied to the minimal increase in terms of parking fares. Again, it is early in the process, and we'll continue to monitor that exercise. Finally, with respect to the timeline, the FY16 budget calendar that the GM will be proposing will utilize the same schedule that was used in FY15, which means that the GM will be proposing his budget to the board in December of this year, and obviously before that and after that, there will be a series of conversations with as many stakeholders as possible to make sure that we are both listening to and hopefully incorporating those, the vision and the issues that Mr. Goldman has raised as part of the development of the budget process. But the calendar at this point calls hopes for an adoption sometime in March of next year, but this time we're looking for adoption of both the operating and the capital budgets at the same time. But obviously we realize that there are several issues that needs to be addressed between now and then to make that timeline feasible. That concludes my presentation, Madam Chairman, and I'll be glad to respond to any questions.
Thank you. Colleagues, questions? Mr. Downey?
Yeah, looking at the timeline, I'm concerned that October may be too soon to really get a good handle on ridership and revenue. You know, at that point, you probably won't even have September data in, so we might want to repeat that again in November to really get a sense of what's happening with Silver Line and with the fare increases.
That you're absolutely right. Obviously, what we anticipate going forward is that these conversations will be a continuous dialogue, which means that in some of the subsequent conversations, you know, ridership will still be part of that conversation as we get additional data.
Mr. Goldman.
Dennis, on your chart, summary of expense reductions, the biggest non-personnel items is caption services at roughly, I guess that's $13 million. Could you flesh out how you make those reductions? What are the types of, quote, services that get reduced or put off to the next year to produce $13 million in savings?
I apologize for not having the details, and I will provide that to you in detail. But there is a series of services involved here, contractual services, including materials that are in the aggregate resulted in. Can I see that? Right. There are some services that are, in this case, to include savings from efficiencies gain in terms of the quantities of calls that were coming into, for example, the smart trip. As we monitor the usage and as the calls go down, obviously the level of calls coming in determines the price or the ultimate values that we pay. So we've made a determination that, and we saw some evidence to that in FY14, that kind of service can absorb some of the reductions that are proposed. But it's a series of services across the spectrum that are individually, I don't want to say insignificant, but are minor, but collectively has produced about a $13 million expected savings in 15.
Could you provide a schedule of those things, a breakdown? Some point.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Mr. Nichols?
Not specifically a question for response right now, but I want to tee up at a time very near term an update on our examination of Metro Access and the elevated dialogue that we've talked about over time about how that will emerge and roll forward and what's happening on that, where it's going, and some targets.
So I think one way to think about some of these questions is that these are areas that we might like to delve into as we head into the next budget. So Metro Access, the issue of where there are these potential contractual service reductions, other areas that may come out in other questions or from our jurisdictional staff where you're showing some significant savings being available that I think we all want to understand moving forward.
Well, in particular, though, in this matter, thinking about the elevated dialogue in the regional context about Metro Access and the service, so I want an update on where those discussions are heading and when we will get to a point of having some substantive dialogue around potential alternative changes. So that's.
Then go right ahead. Sorry.
Thank you.
I thought you were asking a different question.
Not a problem. I can use all the help I can.
Well, as I know you all recall, when this year's budget was passed, the resolution included a direction to staff to do a long-term sustainability study of Metro Access with a report due to the board in June of 2015. We also have been involving the Accessibility Advisory Committee on the development of that study. We're also taking steps to partner with the local academic institutions to help us with this, and the task was to look at Metro's market share of this type of service compared to what other alternatives are out there as well as the ability to mainstream further use of fixed route alternatives for people with disabilities. So all of these areas are being incorporated into the study that we're planning to report out to the board on next summer. But in the meantime, this task of really just kind of looking again at trying to tighten the belt and contribute what we could, this was an evaluation of what we've been able to do in FY14 and where we thought we could contribute, an efficiency to FY15. But it doesn't include, that savings does not come from the types of changes in the long term that we would be exploring in the study.
Other questions? Okay, hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.